We've got many of the very best content creators in the sports card world coming on the program today to talk about what a year it's been for sports cards and what the future might hold.
My name is Jeff Wilson. By day, I invest in tech companies, and at night, I invest in sports cards. Join me and my team as we help you profit from the hobby we all love.
Hello, sports card investors, and welcome to a special episode today because I am about to be joined by some incredible familiar faces, some of the very best content creators in the entire sports card world. We're going to have a great conversation that you are going to want to hear. And of course, this episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay is here for the card collectors with a trick for every trade, like advanced tools for price checking with Price Guide Beta within the eBay app, and up to 50% faster listing with Image Scan. Learn how collecting just got smarter at ebay.com/tradinghub. At our recent virtual holiday, it was an honor to have so many great content creators across the world of sports cards join the show, and we had an awesome conversation. We had two different panels of content creators come together and talk about what the year has been like for sports cards and what the future is likely going to hold, including making some predictions about what card prices might do in the year ahead. It's a couple of conversations you're going to want to hear, so let's get started with them now. Enjoy. All right, everybody, you are going to love this panel because we have some of the best content creators in the sports card hobby coming on the show right now. In fact, let's go ahead and get them on here. I am first joined by Ryan from Card Collector 2. There he is. How's it going, Ryan?
Good, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. And I know our audience, I'm sure they have all seen you because you're everywhere. You're out covering card shows and you've got great videos from your card shop and doing box openings, all kinds of stuff. I sometimes wonder how you are able to get so many places at once. Tell everybody a little bit more about for those maybe who haven't seen you, what you cover and how to follow you.
Yeah, so we own a sports card memorabilia shop in Columbus, Ohio, and a lot of our focus is around like the daily vlog life, right? Trying to give people an inside look at what it's like owning a card store, going to shows, different stuff like that. Really trying to create that vlog style about what it's like to be an entrepreneur in the card world. So if you ever want to follow us, you can follow us on really any sort of platform at this point. TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, et cetera, almost anywhere. And it's all Card Collector 2.
Anywhere you want to be, Ryan is there for you. Awesome, Ryan. Well, welcome to the virtual.
Thanks.
And let's bring on the comeback card investor, Brad. Brad,
what's up,
welcome
Jeff?
To the show. How you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm
what's
doing
up, Ryan?
Well. I'm doing well, man. And Brad, you've been a wonderful YouTuber. Your channel has gained a lot of following, I think in part because you mix your background in the personal finance space with the idea and concept of investing in cards. And so you got a lot of interesting kind of tidbits to share there. What made you get started with this and how can people follow you?
Well, let's see. I started looking into cards in February 2020. When I realized that my life was super serious and I was missing my teen years, I was missing my childhood years. And when I started hearing Gary V talk about sports cards, I knew that I just wanted to learn more and more and more. And of course, with COVID, that was the tipping point to really go in on sports cards. And the more I learned, especially from you, and I remember driving to Vegas, just listening to your podcast early on, I was like, this is fascinating because it's like my adult self meeting my inner 10-year-old. And with some experience behind the camera, or I should say in front of the camera on YouTube in the past, and with my prior career in modeling, I was like, you know what? I might as well document my journey, just like Gary V says. And it's been such a wonderful ride. And so I'm mostly on YouTube as the Comeback Card Investor. I did start an Instagram and I'm on there as well, the Comeback Card Investor, but I don't have the resources you guys have. So I'm a one-man show trying to make it work, but it's fun either way.
Did you bring any cake with you tonight, Brad?
You know what? I had an amazing pecan pie a bit ago, and I did take a picture of it I think I posted it on Instagram, but not tonight. I've gained a couple pounds as the holidays have started, and now that we're you know, into December.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm in the same boat, unfortunately. So I hear you there. Had a little too much fun over Thanksgiving. Awesome. Well,
the
welcome.
Fat is going to your arms, though. I'm seeing it in your arms.
It's just the camera. You know, it adds some muscle there. It looks good. Let's bring on Sam. Sam from Women in the Hobby. Sam, you play a very, very important role in the sports card hobby because you are trying to build awareness around the many great women who are actually part of this hobby. And you've done an excellent job of highlighting a lot of their stories on your YouTube channel. Tell everybody a little bit more about what you do.
Yeah, of course. So my name is Sam, from Women of the Hobby. And so as Jeff mentioned, a lot of what I'm trying to do is just bring awareness to other female collectors who may be out there. That was one thing when I first got in, I didn't necessarily see a lot of. So I just wanted to bring more awareness to these other female collectors. And then, as mentioned, just trying to interview them on YouTube and also highlight other women on Instagram as well.
Yeah, and I think you're doing like a woman in sports card of the week on Instagram. I've seen those profiles every time you post them. Really great you to bring that awareness.
Yeah, definitely. Just like trying to do consistent posting with other women and just really trying to meet a lot of other women too, trying to cultivate somewhat of a community as well.
Awesome. Well, welcome, Sam. Now let's bring on one of the OGs when it comes to maybe the OG, I don't know, when it comes to podcasting in the sports card hobby, certainly one of them, Ty from Breaker Culture and Bench Clear. Ty, I've told you this before, but when I got back into cards, I consumed all of your content like a fire hose. I went back and listened to every single one of your Breaker Culture podcasts. And that's kind of what got me going and got me started. And I still listen to them to this day. Always great content, tons of interviews with really interesting people. What are you up to now with Bench Clear and also with Breaker Culture?
Yeah, the same thing, man. Just telling people stories. I think that's what I started doing 4 or 5 years ago. I started interviewing breakers, right? The group breaking space 4 or 5 years ago was kind of that ugly stepchild. Nobody in the hobby wanted to like accept them. And so I started interviewing them and telling the stories, and it evolved to analytics and to interviewing other people in the hobby. And here we are, still putting out content. So thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for joining for sure. And last but not least, let's bring Adam on. You guys may know Adam from the Basketball Card Podcast, or you may actually know him as the entrepreneur behind the new Basketball Card Fanatic magazine, which is a pretty outstanding magazine. This was the November issue. The December issue is out now. But this is an absolutely outstanding magazine that Adam put together. Issue 15 now. Adam, tell everybody a little bit more about what you do.
Well, first, thanks, Jeff, for having me. And it's good to hang out with all of you good guys here, too. So I'm just an obsessive basketball card collector. I'm a lifelong collector. Basketball is the only sport that I've ever collected. And, I've over the years looked for different ways to share that passion with other people. So I did a podcast and still do that from time to time. But the thing that we've been working on this last year and a half has been Basketball Card Fanatic. And Basketball Card Fanatic has been an absolute blast. We engage with all different passionate basketball card fans throughout the community to create a monthly magazine that's both available in digital and in print. It is really hard. Print is hard. That's what people told me at the beginning. They were right. It has been super hard, but we love it and we have a lot of fun with it. And the next issue is coming out here in the next few weeks, and that'll be issue number 16. So grateful for those of you who've helped sponsor and sustain the magazine and those of you who are subscribers out there. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And I know, Adam, you came with a special offer for anybody watching tonight who might want to subscribe to this magazine, which I highly recommend they do because it's just full of incredible, incredible articles about all aspects of basketball card collecting. Promo code SCI, I believe it is, 50% off your first issue. Is that right, Adam?
Yeah. So SCI for your first 50% off. Or 50% off your first issue. Actually, I should know this. It's either SCI or SCI 50. Forgive me for not knowing that. But 50% off your first issue, just go to bcfmag.com and enter one of those two promo codes when you get to the pay screen. And then if you like it, stay subscribed. And if you think that it's a waste of time, then, you know, you're welcome to go find another cool basketball card magazine.
Yes, there are so many options out there. Awesome, Adam. Well, welcome. Welcome. And hopefully we get you some new subscribers tonight, because it's definitely, definitely a worthwhile magazine, bcfmag.com. All right, guys, I want to start. Let's talk a little bit about what we've seen in the sports card hobby this year. Then we'll talk a little bit about next year. Then we'll talk a little bit about content creation for anyone out there who's maybe thinking about jumping in the content creation game. But this year was an interesting one. The year started with the sports card hobby red hot, the hottest it has ever been the first couple of months of this year. Prices setting all-time records. It seemed like it was on the headlines of ESPN about all these sports cards. CNN even was covering sports cards and what they were selling for. Then things cooled down a lot, right? As you got into March, and especially April, May, June, July, we saw a big cooling off period. Recently, we've seen things level off. It seems like certain types of cards are still kind of soft, like base cards, that type of thing. Other cards are picking back up a little bit. I'm curious to get your perspectives on kind of what you've seen this year and what you might think going forward. Ryan, let's start with you, because as a card shop owner, I'm curious how the volatility in the market actually affects your business, since you deal with buying and selling product all the time.
Yeah, it's definitely a tricky situation to kind of, manage, really, because with the volume we try to keep up with having stuff in shop and on eBay and, you know, live sales and at grading and so many things, as the market fluctuates so much, it's tricky to kind of, to monitor, really, because again, somebody has a good game and the market is so volatile right now. If you have a good game, their stuff goes up, 30%. If they have a bad game, it drops 40%. It's definitely something that we try to manage the best you can. There's no way, like, when you're as involved in the market as we are and you buy as much, like, you'll never hit every home run on every single player. You're going to miss on a lot. Again, I think the big thing is just to try to manage it really the best you can and keep up with it as much as we can.
Now, are you, since you're constantly buying and selling cards, are you trying to not hold cards for too long because you risk, you risk a market downturn maybe affecting the price of your overall inventory? Or do you figure you're going to get the upswings alongside the downswing, so you're not as focused on kind of how quickly you're turning your inventory over?
Yeah, so I don't pay too much attention to, like, if a guy's going to go up or go down. We try to, like, when we buy stuff, since a lot of, like, what we like to do is buy, like, bulk lots, where some things you're going to do well on, some things you may not do as well on. But that's really why I try to not get as involved a lot in a lot of the newer guys, right? The guys that you can hit the home runs on. That's why I try to stick a little bit more to, like, the proven stuff, because that stuff's just not as volatile. Like, Jordan Love starts and Jordan's Love stuff goes up and then he doesn't look good and then it goes down right away. And then, Jason Tatum does well and then he doesn't do well. It just, those, you buy a card at 2,800, like we bought a Luka Blue Velocity 10 2 weeks ago, it was 2,800. And by the time we sold it, it was 2,100, right? Like, those are just not kind of, those are not really investments we're looking to make at the moment. So we try to stick a little bit more into, like, the stuff that's just not as, really not as volatile.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I get that. And Brad, as a financial advisor, a financial coach, what have you seen from the sports card market this year? How are you looking at it now, having that financial background that you do?
I mean, personally, this year has been so wildly different than 2020. 2020 was the Wild West. It was just everything had potential. Everything was going up. And this was a massive cooling down and a maturing of the hobby. And so, before this year, it looked like you could invest in pretty much any younger player, in any base card, any silver, anything with a PSA logo on it, and it would have a good chance of going up. And it's funny how, just looking at the last 6 months, 8 months, how mature the hobby has gotten. And you could tell that certain demographics have left the hobby. Certain people have left. They gave it a shot. It wasn't for them. They moved on to something else. And so just looking at things from a more macroeconomic standpoint of where could their attention be going? Where could their money be going? What else is vying for attention? I think that's a big thing is, you know, we can only spend so much time and energy in a day, and where are the eyes and ears going? And so my strategy is definitely going towards more proven guys that might have less upside, but a lot less downside. I think those are the cards and those are the players that I would like to target going forward, just because it has been so volatile in the past, and it sucks losing money. It sucks making bad investments. It's not a good feeling. And so it's a lot nicer to just keep the cards that you like for yourself. But then when it comes to investing, making sure that it is something that a collector, not just a flipper, but a collector would like, hopefully 5 or 10 years from now.
Yeah, totally makes sense. I appreciate that. Sam, I believe from hearing your story that you really kind of got back into the hobby last year, I think in 2020, right as things were kind of just starting to really boom again. I think right in the early stages of the pandemic, if I recall. What has your perspective on the last 2 years been like?
Yeah, definitely. That's correct. I got back in probably when a lot of other people got back in. And so I think it's been interesting to see kind of my first full year in the hobby. In the beginning, as everyone's kind of said, right when COVID happened, everything was going up. It was almost unbelievable to an extent. And I think now that we've seen the market cool off and we've seen things go up and down, it makes it more interesting to me, because I think it means it's more realistic in a way. I was almost scared to put a lot of money in something that just kept going up. But I think now I'm a little bit more confident in the fact that it's almost more of a true market and the fact that it ebbs and flows.
Yeah, and that we are definitely seeing that. Those very, very, very astute points. Very astute points for sure. And Ty, I know you have been tracking, you know, the price changes of cards for a long time. You, been looking at, you know, going back several years, looking at the new modern classes that have been coming in, particularly in basketball, and how those, you know, prism cards and whatnot have fluctuated over the course of time. What have been your impressions of this year?
I think this year we got back to what the hobby's always been, right? It's I think Brad nailed it. It's not, you can't just throw a dart and everything works. I think people learned the hard way, unfortunately, that the hobby for 50 plus years, 70 plus years has always been this way, where you have to put your money in proven guys. And I think you're starting to see this year, the people that are staying around are saying, okay, you know what? I'm going to double down maybe, but I'm going to go get guys that I know are proven. I'm going to go back. I'm going to go learn vintage cards. I'm going to buy serial numbered cards. I'm going to buy PSA 10 Gem Mint only cards. You're starting to see that crew kind of focus on that, which is good, right? I mean, they're starting to realize that everything just doesn't work. You have to be smart with your money in the hobby. So it's a good thing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it is. It is. It is in many ways. I think a painful lesson probably for some over the course of this year, but, you know, refocusing on what will hopefully be a strong future, refocusing on the right cards for growth over the next several years. And Adam, you've got an incredible collection. A lot of your collection is older basketball. I've seen like a lot of 90s basketball and that type of thing when you show off your incredible collection on Instagram. Have you felt more insulated from the price fluctuations over the last year because of the collection that you have and the fact that you've had some of these cards for a long time? Or what's been your perspective?
Man, that's a great question. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I have felt like as the whole world is talking about how the market's going up or the market's going down, I'm kind of sitting there going, really? I didn't realize. I just don't probably notice it as much as everybody else, or not everybody else, but a lot of people do on a day-to-day basis. But I think, you know, as a whole, I think what Sam said is spot on. And I like the word that she used. She used the word realistic. I think we as the whole of the market became more realistic. And we matured in that we understood, you know, that there isn't this like forever up and to the right thing that I feel like a lot of people thought was going to happen. It turns out that doesn't happen in any market. Brad could probably tell us that. So, after what we saw in 2020, it's good to be more realistic. It's good to be more mature. And then I think the other thing that I've noticed in my 30 plus years in the hobby is that it's all cyclical, right? There's like, There are these ups that are followed by these downs, and it's not that that's too simplistic, but you can feel it when it's happening sometimes. And so although my collection maybe is more, you know, stuff that's like you say, is more insulated from that. I kind of watched it and could feel it happening as it was happening for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting stuff. And of course, there's been so many other factors at play this year. I mean, Brad referenced how, you know, people have turned attention to other things. You've had obviously the rise of NFTs, or I should say maybe the rise in the fall. And now we're kind of in a rise again, it seems, with NFTs for sure. But, you know, you've had obviously crypto, you've had other forms of collectibles that have caught attention and have been hot. It's been a wild year to watch all of that progress. But I'd like to ask, let's bring everybody up on the screen together here, because I'd like to ask a question that, of course, none of us actually know the answer to, but we're going to do our best guess. I just from a show of hands, I'm going to ask you guys if you think as a whole, and this is just kind of a general across the board, all cards, you know, merged into one. Do you think cards are going to be more valuable a year from now than they are today? Or do you think next year is going to be a little rocky? What about 5 years? What about 10 years? So I'm going to ask just by show of hands, let's just kind of get the group consensus here. If you think cards are going to be more valuable as a whole 1 year from now than they are today, raise your hand. Okay. I'm kind of slightly shaky with my hand too. I'm kind of like Brad. So a little bit of a mixed reaction there. That's interesting. Of course, that's a very big generalization. You probably are going to see certain categories of cards go up and you may see others go down. Who knows? But what about 5 years? How's everyone feeling about the longer term future? Or are you feeling uncertain with all the Fanatic stuff happening and who knows what's it going to look like? If you feel like cards are going to be more valuable in 5 years than they are today, raise your hand. A little bit of hesitation. Okay, that's interesting. And then finally, let's look 10 years out. If you think cards are going to be more valuable 10 years than today, raise your hand.
I just hope I'm alive.
Just from inflation.
Well, sure. Ryan, you showed a little bit of hesitance when you were kind of looking out into the future, right? You seemed, you were like, I don't know, totally know, 5 years, 10 years. But you also are very heavily invested in the hobby since you obviously own a card shop. What is your, like, what's your hesitation there? What do you think the future may or may not hold?
Just a lot of unknowns from, like you said, the Fanatics deal, right? We don't know what that looks like. I think if it's easy to look forward and say this is going to be, you know, I don't want to be doom and gloom here. It's, you know, it's so easy to look forward and say that, like, hey, this is going to be amazing. The market's going to continue to go up. But look back 5 years ago, like Jordan Exquisite patch autos at the National were $2,000, you know, you were trading those back in the day for Zeke autos and Dak autos. Like I was there, I watched it happen. So to say 5 years from now, like, you know, Michael Jordan Exquisite autos are $100,000 now. And 5 years ago, they were $2,000. What's to say that they don't go back to $2,000? I'm not saying Jordan autos are going to drop to $2,000, but it works like, you know, like Adam said, this is cyclical. Things go up, things go down. And as you mentioned, Jeff, there's been other attention and other things like crypto and NFTs and other alternative assets. Does that move attention elsewhere? I'm not sure. I'm pretty optimistic about the market. I like cards. Like you said, I'm heavily invested in it, but I'm just not one to immediately put up and say, yes, cards will be worth more as a whole 5 years from now. I think there's a lot of unknown.
Yeah, that makes sense. Brad, you were a little more hesitant in like the 1 year outlook. You were kind of like me, your hand was shaking a little bit. What is your, like, why are the uncertainty about the next year? You think prices still need to shake out a little bit? Population counts are getting too high? What are your thoughts?
It's the pop counts, because overall money entering the hobby could be higher in a year's time than now, but per card that could be diluted because we still don't know what's coming out. And, you know, Gemrate puts out a lot of great information on how many cards are being released per week and per month, and the numbers are staggering. So it's like, you know, it could be a Kyler Murray, who is my best example of a player who is playing well, who's in the MVP discussion, and yet his cards, you know, when I bought them, they were in like January, February, and they were about $400 for a Prism Base 10. And the prices are actually lower now than back then, even though he's playing so well. So I always think about how many cards are going to come back from PSA, BGS, and all the others. And the price per card may well be lower in a year's time, even if there's more money and interest in the hobby. And so until all the backlog is taken care of and we have a good number of cards going in and coming out every month, I don't feel confident in those cards. Now, the super rare stuff is a different story, but the average card, that $100 to $2,000 card, I don't know about.
That's fair. Ty, do you share that concern?
Yeah, I do. I don't think it's – I'm not net positive for the next year. Like, it's a hard no for me. I just feel like there's a lot – we're in the middle of an identity crisis in the hobby right now. Like, we're trying to figure out who we are as a hobby. And I think it's going to take some time for that to happen. And I think the gap's widening between the upper-end stuff and the lower-end stuff. Like, the middle ground, we'll see where it shakes out, but that gap is getting bigger. We'll see what happens, but I'm definitely not bullish for the short term.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. You know, the data shows, you know, when I look at like graphs and market movers and that type of thing, it clearly shows a continued separation between your base cards, especially, which continue to drop, continue to be soft. And then, but at the same time, you've seen certain types of cards like Kabooms and, you know, downtown cards and other types of, you know, some of the serial numbered cards, a lot of the really high end cards, you've seen that stuff actually continue to rise in value over the last several months when the overall market has been relatively soft. Things have been going down. So there does seem to be more of a separation. I'm even seeing it in the data between Prism Silver and Prism Base, where there seems to be a little bit of a growing gap, at least with certain types of cards, between silvers and base cards. Silvers are holding their value a lot more. Of course, a lot of that probably has to do with population and the fact that there's so many bases that are now coming back from PSA. Interesting. Adam, are you... obviously, kind of as a collector of a lot of this stuff, you did seem optimistic about the future. And is that just because you've seen this for a long time and you feel like, you know, over time these cycles will continue, but the hobby is going to continue to go in generally a good direction?
Yeah, your question's a binary one, right? So we have to choose. I like how some people went, yeah, like this, because that gives us a third option. But if I have to choose between yes or no, I'm going to choose yes. It's going to be hot largely because of the hundreds, literally hundreds of millions of dollars that have been spent on the infrastructure of the hobby. You know, really smart people have come to the market and have invested in us, in our hobby, not just in the cards, but in the ways that we sell the cards and the ways that we show the cards off and, you know, in all sorts of other different types of companies. And the reason that they've done that is because they see potential growth, not just the growth that we saw between, you know, 2020 and now, but the growth that we still have to go through. So, you know, if I had to guess, I believe that the whole of the market still has a long way to go. But when you get into the nuance of talking about like the different types of cards and stuff that's going to gain in popularity versus stuff that's not going to. Some stuff is certainly going to increase in popularity and some stuff is certainly going to decrease. The question is, you know, what is going to happen, you know, with each individual card? And those have the whole spectrum of possibilities for sure.
And Sam, you made a really interesting comment about how the fact that maybe not everything is going up is actually maybe makes the market feel a little more real or perhaps gives you a little more confidence. That I thought that's a really interesting kind of astute comment. So how do you feel, you know, from your perspective about the next year or the years ahead?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like in the next year, I'm a little bit more concerned. Mainly, I think Brad mentioned the population count, but also the print run. I think there's a lot more products we can see. I think one thing that I've seen more recently here is just the retail product that you can actually find in stores now a little bit more. So I think that's interesting. So I think in the next year, I'm a little worrisome, but in the long term, I'm fairly confident. I think the bigger cards are going to get bigger, whereas maybe some of the smaller cards may become part of that junk slab era.
Yeah, these are great thoughts, guys. I appreciate you sharing all of them. And I'm with one of the comments that Adam made really has been something that's resonated with me around the fact that there's so much money being invested into the infrastructure of the hobby. And when you see a company like Fanatics come along and pay these exorbitant amount of money, you know, to get the contracts long term and getting the sports teams involved, to me, that gives me a lot of confidence about where things are going to be 10 years out. What I don't know is where things are going to be a year or two out. And it may be bumpy when Fanatics gets involved. There's a lot of questions that remain to be answered, like Ryan said. But I do feel like, you know, I'm going to put my chips where the money is and where the money's going. And as a whole, with that amount of money being invested in the hobby, being invested in the infrastructure for the hobby, I'm hopeful that 10 years from now, things are going to be a lot stronger than they are today. I'm keeping my fingers crossed on that one for sure. Okay, so we talked a bit about, you know, the sports card hobby and what things have done, but I want to talk a little bit before you guys get out of here, guys and gals, I should say, apologies, about content creation and the fact that all of you have had the success that you've had across different channels and doing it in different ways. We've got some folks on here who are really big, you know, podcasting. We got some folks who are really YouTube focused. We've got Ryan who got, you know, kind of cut a lot of his teeth initially on Instagram and has an incredible Instagram following. I'm curious, what is the advice you would give for somebody out there who might be watching today, who is fascinated by what you do and might be interested in getting into content creation on their own? Sam, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the biggest things is really to follow the content creators that you want to be like. I think, you know, imitation in some forms is the best flattery. I think that's the saying, something like that. So I think that's one of the biggest things is, you know, initially before I started my content journey, so to speak, I was watching a lot of other content creators out there and seeing what they did and seeing, okay, this is what I like that they do. This is what I don't like. So really just seeing what else is out there and kind of how you can make it and tailor it towards what you want to bring and what you think will bring value to the hobby.
Awesome advice. Thank you, Sam. Ty, how about from your perspective?
Yeah, I would say number one, know your strengths, like know what you're good at. I would say be genuinely curious when you're putting out content. People realize authenticity pretty quick. When you have a genuine curiosity in people, things, it comes out. And then I would say set goals, you know, be very practical with the goals you set and try to achieve them. And when you're putting out content, if you're going to put out 10 a month, put out 10 a month and stick to it and try to achieve it. I think just doing simple things like that makes putting content out a little bit easier because it's so easy to get stuck in that trap of just content fatigue, right? It's just like card fatigue, right? Content fatigue is very real. So just set those goals and be yourself. I think it all works itself out.
Awesome advice. Adam, how about from your perspective?
I like Ty's thoughts there about being yourself. You know, I think all of us have tried at different times of our lives to be cool, you know, to try to give people what they want rather than just share what we think or try to be ourselves. And the great thing is if you're yourself and people like you, then you're set. But if you're somebody else and people like you, then you have to keep being that. And so, you know, I would just tell everybody, like, don't be afraid to make some mistakes, try things that are you, and some people will like it and some people won't. And don't worry about those who don't.
Awesome advice. Brad, how about you?
I would say to create content that when the novelty wears off, you still feel good about putting out because it will be exciting at first. And then there'll be a point where it becomes a bit of a chore and you might get fatigued and you might just not feel the same way as you did when you began, but that's just part of it. So a year out, 2 years out, what content would you feel great about? And the other thing too is try to improve with every podcast, every video, every post. Don't just stay, you know, don't not grow or don't stay where you're at. Always try to find 1 or 2% of growth or improvement with every post or every video, and then you'll see results. And if you focus on what could I put out that would be so valuable that someone might share it with someone else, then you're more than likely going to make a good piece of content.
That's awesome advice. And yeah, that, you know, what gives you that inspiration? That's such a big thing. I've gotten such a shot in the arm this year from being able to go to card shows and being able to a totally different way of creating content. Cause, you know, previously all the content that I was creating was, you know, from my little home studio in my basement. For a long time. And so actually being able to get out to card shows and like show a different perspective of the hobby, it's been invigorating. And I think finding, as you said, Brad, kind of what is that lane for yourself? What invigorates you is really, really important. Ryan, how about yourself? You're all over doing all kinds of different content. How would you advise somebody who's wanting to get into that game today?
Yeah, so I would probably repeat a lot of what, you know, these four other fine guests have said, but I think the big thing for me is just being consistent, right? You know, Ty mentioned set goals for yourself. That's important too. Because like a lot of them have said, you're going to get worn out by it. You might not have the same ambition the 10th time you post something rather than like the same ambition you had the first time. So I think that's big, but also, you know, I think early on, I didn't understand what 30 minutes of research would get me in it. So I would say do your homework on hashtags and thumbnails and just the 30 minutes of research and how you can grow through social was really big for me later as I was really trying to focus a lot more on it. So that's one thing I would say is just one, be consistent, but then two, you know, spend a little bit of time, not necessarily on finding the right camera angle of your favorite card to post, but doing a little bit more homework on how you can grow if that's your goal.
Guys, this has been awesome. I really, really appreciate it. I'm going to get you out of here on this real quick. Everybody, just tell me what your one favorite card is that you cannot live without. And we'll get you out of here on that. Ryan, what is your one favorite card? Is it an Ohio State guy? Who is it?
Yeah, it would probably be a one-of-one patch of Braxton Miller. That's really like my Buckeye guy. So I'd probably say that would be my card.
There you go. Not too expensive these days. So that's a good card to PC.
Too soon.
How about you, Ty?
My pink Pulsar, Michael Porter Jr., although that's not a hot card anymore with his back surgery, but Michael Porter Jr.
There you go. You have been on Michael Porter Jr. Of course, he was a Missouri guy, right? For a minute there. For a game or two before? You got to see him for a little bit. So
you like rubbing that in. I like it.
There you go. Adam.
Man, it's tough. I'm going to go with a little out of the box here. I'll go with my Wilt Chamberlain 1968 Topps test card. There's like 14 of them in the world. And I love that card.
Love the scarcity. That's awesome. How about you, Sam?
Yeah, for me, I'm a huge Carolina Panthers fan. So I like my Luke Kuechly rookie autograph. It's one I'll always keep.
There you go. One of the great linebackers for sure. And how about you, Brad?
Well, if I got into this hobby before 2020, I would have this ridiculous collection. However, my favorite card is my 96 Topps Kobe Bryant, and it's only a PSA 9. It's not a super rare card, but I actually picked that out of a dollar bin at First in Sports Card Shop in Tampa when I was maybe 11 years old, 12 years old. And I got such a high off of finding that has become my most treasured card.
That is awesome. What a great story. Awesome, guys. Thank you so much for sharing all of this. I know the viewers love it. And really appreciate you guys joining the virtual holiday sports card show. Have a great evening and keep creating the awesome content. You guys are doing great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Take care. All right, everybody. I am extremely excited for this next group of people to join the virtual holiday because you're going to recognize almost all of them. These are some of the biggest content creators in the world of sports cards and trading cards. And we're about to have a really fun discussion. So I'm going to introduce them one by one. We've got several here we're bringing into the show. But let's start with Laura from Don Diego Trading. And there she is. Hey, Laura, welcome to the virtual holiday.
Thank you. Amazing setup. Love it. I got my red lights on in the back, so trying to compete with you isn't fair, but it's something.
I appreciate the holiday cheer you are bringing for sure. Well, welcome, Laura. And I'm sure most of our audience has seen you because you've grown very, very quickly into being an absolute must-follow star on Instagram. But for those who maybe aren't following you right now, let everyone know how they can find you.
You could find me on Instagram at Don Diego Trading. All of my platforms, my username is the same. So TikTok, YouTube, all that is at Don Diego Trading.
And Laura does incredible content, sports cards and trading card games, a little more on the trading card games Pokemon side, but just absolutely fabulous content. She is a must follow. So welcome, Laura.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And let's also bring on John from Lootbox. You guys, I'm sure have seen John all over YouTube with his crazy reactions to breaks. John and I did an epic box battle at the Dallas Card Show several months ago. You probably have seen it on this YouTube channel. John, are you still upset by the outcome of that box battle?
Oh, man, 100%. If you take a look at the value now, I think I would have hands down won that match with Andrew and I versus you. So it's all right. It is what it is. Sometimes I go back and read the comments just to see how people are still interacting and see what they, you know, think of the battle. But I loved it either way.
It was a great episode. I think it's gosh, 300,000 or 400,000 views at this point. I haven't checked in a little while, but it was a popular one for sure. It's on up there. Awesome. And John, I'm sure people are familiar, but how do people find you and what you're doing?
Absolutely. You can find us on Lootbox TV on YouTube and Lootbox TV on Instagram, TikTok. We try to keep up with all the social media outlets.
Awesome. And let's bring on Jay from Mojo Sports. Jay might be, I don't know, you might be the OG content creator out of this group, Jay. You've been doing it for a while, and you produce amazing content on YouTube, a wide variety of card show coverage and you know, unboxings and PSA submissions, all kinds of really interesting stuff. Jay, tell everybody about what you're up to.
Yeah, man. So everyone always tells me I'm not usually in California, but during the week I'm in California, during the weekend I'm traveling. So I am appreciate the kind words about the OG. I've been doing this 10 years, and you can find me on YouTube, Mojo Sports. You can check out the Instagram, Mojo Autographs. And we do have a website, mojosports.org. We've been getting into the buying and trading of the sports cards and trading cards, so you can check it out.
Awesome. Welcome, Jay. And we're going to bring on two content creators who have been out there for quite some time on their own channels, but they've recently come together to create a brand new channel. We're going to bring on Ryan and Jordan. You may know Ryan from Breakout Cards and Jordan from Sports Cards Analytics on YouTube. But you two guys have come together to create Moneyball Cards, the Moneyball Cards podcast on YouTube. Ryan, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about that?
Yeah, hey, thanks for having us on, Jeff. So me and Jordan are both full-time data analysts, and we recently launched a YouTube channel, which is the Moneyball Cards podcast. Every single week, we take a look at the data behind the cards, giving you guys advanced stats and much more.
Awesome. And Jordan, how does this tie into your background?
I've been in analytics for the past 3 years, and when Ryan reached out to me, because I run the sports card analytics channel and the Instagram, he reached out to me, hey, let's do an analytics podcast together where we're both, you know, analyzing the data and putting in the time, and it's really worked out over the past few months.
Awesome. Well, we're excited, guys. Go check out the Moneyball Cards podcast on YouTube. It's a very, very cool show. And last but certainly not least, let's bring on Daps. And out of everybody here, Daps, you've got all of us beat in terms of your audience. You put up incredibly ridiculous numbers on TikTok. I was just looking at your most recent video. It's got hundreds of thousands of TikTok views. How do you do this all, sir? How have you become such a TikTok superstar?
Well, I think it's mainly because I don't have much competition on there, guys, because all you guys refuse to get on there, which has only been to my benefit. So I'm kind of just competing with myself over there. We'll see how long that lasts. But we have a ton of fun with skits. I'm obviously out in Los Angeles, where there's a plethora of actors and actresses and influencers. So we were kind of shooting skits before we got really back into the card market years ago. We've been shooting skits for probably 10 years just as a hobby. So we were a little ahead of the game in terms of being able to produce sports card skits that our users and our audience could really engage with and enjoy. And, you know, we make fun of ourselves, right? Like the realistic aspect of this industry is that you don't hit a big card every time you open a pack. So we get a ton of views when we hit a downtown Joe Burrow, and we also get a ton of views when we take an L on a pack, and people love to hate on us on those too. So,
yeah, you do. I love the video format where it's like, hey, here's a $100 pack, and it's like you get to the end of the pack, it's like I lost all my $100.
Right.
Those are fun. Definitely worth the watch. Awesome. Well, welcome Daps as well. Well, this is obviously an incredible group of content creators. So let me first just kind of ask what inspired each of you to start creating content and what do you love most about doing it? What keeps you going? Because it's a lot of work to be outputting the types of content that you guys do. So John, maybe we'll start with you.
Yeah. I feel like my days never ends. So what really keeps me going is all the positive feedback, views, the community that we built, the interaction, the people. You can really see that there's a lot of individuals that truly enjoy the hobby and actually getting out there, opening up cards, and the excitement from our end of going hunting, trying to find the chase cards. It's a different level of excitement and just a sense of joy. And then just meeting friends throughout the community. Don Diego, Jay, and I've known them for a while now, and you know, meeting them in public and actually collabing together is just so awesome. And then helping out individuals and being there and doing everything that I possibly can to help others in the community is just a great feeling. It's a special bond that you get, and that's really what keeps me going, keeps me active, because my nights can be long. I mean, sometimes I'm getting like 5 hours of sleep because I'm doing so much, but you know, I choose to do that just because of everything that is going on and the positivity in the community.
Well, the energy always comes through on your videos. They are some of the most fun, you know, pack opening videos that there are out there that anyone does. So I love watching them.
Appreciate it.
Laura, you are newer to the game, but have brought a ton of energy to your channel this year. What kind of got you going, and what keeps you going and expanding what you're doing?
Kind of the same as John said. It's rewarding to see how well some of the videos do and the content does, and it just makes you kind of like want to keep doing it and doing more and more. So, and again, like meeting people in person, that's awesome. Traveling to shows and putting out unique content and kind of interacting with the community basically 24/7. It's just been a nonstop grind, but super rewarding. So it makes me just want to keep going.
And Laura achieved something that I'm very, very jealous of. She had a beautiful storefront in New York City at Bleecker Trading painted with her likeness on the front of the New York City storefronts. How did that come about, and what was that night like for you?
I still can't believe that. That's insane. I hosted my first trade night. It went really well. We opened up a Japanese Team Rocket box. I had merch. I had my face on Bleecker Street. It was just surreal, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around, like, this is my first year of doing this. So for that to come about within the first year, I don't know what's going to come next. I'm super excited to see what I can do in the next 5 years.
Yeah, we're all excited to see what you can do in the next 5 years. That's awesome. And Jay, you've been doing this for a while. You said during your intro for 10 years doing content like this. So how do you keep going? Because you've been doing these card shows and everything for much longer than most of us have.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think one thing all of us have in common, man, is we're all passionate about this thing. And I think, you know, for us, like, you know, we can elevate the hobby. I mean, we can change the hobby in so many different directions and ways. And from my perspective, it's like I'm traveling around the United States, and there's people that are in South Dakota that can't go to that card show. And like, I'm giving them the chance to experience that from my content. And, you know, I'm very passionate about content creation, but I love sports cards. I love trading cards. You know, when I was a kid, I loved Pokemon cards, and it's nostalgic, you know, and like, what better thing to bring people together than to bring in like this nostalgic, like capturing of the moments at these shows. And honestly, for all of us, for me specifically, it's just, I'm always open-minded to new ideas. You know, I'm always trying to do the next thing, and going. So it's such a journey, man, and I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Awesome. It shows that passion shows through in your content for sure. Jordan, you've got that incredible data background. I know you grind hard when you're doing these different shows for Moneyball cards. You're diving deep into the data. You're analyzing the data. I know you're talking to our team here constantly about, you know, things and market movers and all that kind of thing. What keeps you wanting to put that level of, you know, effort into the data work that you're doing when you have a full-time job that obviously demands that type of effort as well?
Yeah, I'm gonna sound like such a nerd when I say this. I mean, I've been in cards my whole life, but I love Excel just as much as I love cards. And I love building formulas and putting them together. And before I started creating content, you know, I'm just your average regular data analyst. And I started putting cards into Excel and building formulas and figuring things out, like, hey, you might find some hacks looking at the data. And I decided I'm going to make some content and kind of throw that out there for people to see. And it's not the most exciting thing in the world because it's just numbers, but I try to make it, you know, fun and try to show my passion. And it's really meshed together. And now we're here where I'm making a whole podcast of Moneyball Cards, but I definitely put in hours before I make an episode. I'm sitting there just taking notes for hours, you know, trying to figure it all out for you guys.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate that effort for sure. And Ryan, you are about to achieve something this year that I am so incredibly jealous of. 52 card shows in a year, a card show a week. Where are you? Where are you on that goal? And when is this coming? This is coming. I guess it's coming to an accomplishment right now, right?
Yeah. So December 18th is card show number 52. I'm going to be flying out to Alabama. I believe this is show or state number 15 with that as well. So every single weekend I'm traveling to shows. Some weekends I'll do two or three shows at one time, which is kind of crazy. It's times in multiple states as well. And I can't wait to finish off with that. I have that, obviously Moneyball Cards, and then a full-time job. So it's tough balancing everything.
And your goal next year, which you just recently told me about, is even wilder. Tell everybody about what you're going to be doing in 2022.
Yeah, so I'm going to start working on going to all 50 states for a card show. So some states don't have card shows yet, but I'm going to try to work with some LCSs and get impromptu card shows there. And eventually knock out all 50. I don't know if I'm going to accomplish it in 2022, most likely 23 because of the travel and scheduling, but it's going to be a fun time doing that.
And we can follow all of that on your YouTube breakout card. So that's going to be a fun follow for sure. Dap, what, you know, you mentioned doing these skits for a while, and then you really seem to have found this awesome niche of bringing humor into the sports card hobby, using TikTok as a platform to create these really fun videos that people like engaging with. What has kept you, you know, what landed you on sports cards and what is keeping you pushing hard in that area?
Well, my grandfather was a scout for the New York Jets. So I grew up going to Giant Stadium and, you know, we would get to park next to Curtis Martin or Wayne Corbett and, you know, guys that I idolized. And I've always just been a huge, huge sports fan. I grew up collecting Pokemon and sports cards as well. You know, from like 2000 to 2012, I probably stopped collecting cards. And then I got back into it with the Prism sets. And I've always had a passion for sports. And I have all of this, what I thought was useless knowledge about sports statistics. But on my live streams, I bring this stuff up and everybody wants to talk about it. So, now I kind of have this useless information has become useful in my sports realm. And I've always been a sports fanatic. So I could talk about sports all day long. It doesn't feel like a job. I wake up 9 a.m. every day. I work on Dap Sports till midnight, 1 a.m. I feel for John from Lootbox talking about he getting no sleep. Like, but I don't feel like I'm working. So I'm very grateful. I'm you know, coming into this holiday. I'm very grateful that I get to see you wearing this hat that you're wearing, Jeff. I mean, this is good stuff to be with friends and, you know, doing what you love.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. I appreciate all of you coming on. I want to ask a couple of questions about the sports card hobby, but before we do, one more content creator question, because I think this is anyone out there who's watching who might be motivated to start creating their own content and taking inspiration from how all of your channels have grown. I'm curious, how did you, each of you, focuses, you kind of have one primary area that a lot of your focus is on. Some of you may be across multiple channels, but you at least kind of got started in one primary area, whether that's like Instagram for Laura or whether that's TikTok for Daps, et cetera. Why did you choose that? And how much, as part of kind of your future strategy, how much are you really like laser concentrating on one particular platform versus trying to diversify yourself across multiple different platforms? Who wants to start? You want to start with John? I know, John, you've done obviously a ton on YouTube.
Yeah. So just overall, it's just a lot. I mean, it's a lot to take in. It's not as simple as, you know, starting off on one particular platform. I mean, with everything that's changing so dynamic, that you have to stay up to date and consistent. what's going on. You have to understand and realize you know it's okay to adjust, and it's okay to do something different. Right now, short form content is taking over the world. You'll see YouTube now doing shorts. You see TikTok blowing up. You see Instagram doing reels, and you have to be willing to adapt and remain consistent. Tackling everything across the board is something that everybody's just going to have to end up doing at some point. It's going to be hard to continue to focus on one outlet. And if you do focus on one outlet, you have to be consistent. One thing that I noticed because I switched, I started in Pokemon, really helped get, you know, growing. But I also had a love of sports. So we sprinkled sports a little bit every now and then into there. And I saw the sports market enjoying our content a lot more than a lot of our Pokemon content that we were putting out. So we made the transition to that, and we just saw a skyrocket in overall activity, overall engagement, and so forth. And then I realized, in order for us to grow, we have to, you know, put your hands on every single social media outlet and really come up with a plan and then remain consistent. So I think going forward, you got to be able to adapt it and really look at across all platforms.
And that's a lot. That takes a lot of work to do. Laura, I know you've really put a lot of concentration on Instagram. I think you're doing a lot on TikTok as well. Why did you choose to start there? And then where do you see yourself going over time?
I kind of took the approach to just do what I know first and kind of master that before I branched out. But I create content for, you know, like you said, Instagram, TikTok, and just kind of starting on YouTube. I try to balance my feeds with a variety of educational content, my collection displays, and a little down-to-earth window just in my day-to-day life. So I've gone with just making the content first and then thinking about where it should end up.
Yeah, makes sense. Create the content and then figure out the right platform. John, you've been doing this for 10 years. Did you start more so on YouTube in the early days, or where were your was your original concentration? How has that changed over time?
So yeah, man, I mean, dude, it started with me. I mean, dude, social media wasn't a thing. Like Twitter was just getting off. I was just junior in high school. I had one of those flip cameras. I was recording mail days, doing a couple box breaks. Boxes weren't, National Treasures was like $500, $700. And you'd be complaining about not getting the value back. And now it's crazy. But it just started with like a small like niche of YouTube. And then I always will say that like, I'm not calling myself a pioneer, but I knew. So I saw social media, how it was going to happen. And I got on Twitter and I started to see, and I was like, oh my gosh, dude, nobody's going to be doing websites anymore. Like in high school, I was masterminding, like thinking, wow, social media is a great way to sell anything you want. And you don't have to pay any money. It's free. You know, are you kidding me? You know how much people pay for marketing and for website development? You don't have to do that anymore. And my advice to someone new is, just if you're passionate, if you're truly passionate about content creation, just go for it. And the thing, and I gotta thank John for this, is I had, you know, I should have been asking for help more. And John actually helped me out with my YouTube content creation. Lootbox, Gin and Juice helped me become a better YouTuber. They helped me because they saw and they believed in me. And if someone believes in you and they want to help you, just take what you can. Because I mean, even you, Sports Card Investor Jeff, I mean, your guys' content, the production value is excellent. And it's just, it's awesome to see because you're inspiring many people.
Appreciate that. Thanks a lot, Jay. Thank you. Ryan and Jordan, I know you decided to launch the Moneyball Cards podcast on YouTube. You've made that a YouTube show. I know both of you have done things on YouTube in the past. Why YouTube for you?
I actually started out on Instagram and I had sports card analytics and I was putting stuff out there, but I felt like YouTube was a better way to show analytics in a visual way. I think if I just put a post on Instagram and just wrote out this long thing, it might get boring for some people. So I figured maybe if I make this more visual and show graphics of what's going on with card values, it would really help people to understand it and learn from what I was trying to teach them.
Awesome. And how about you, Ryan?
Yeah, so I started on the YouTube side and then started expanding outwards. I built out an audience there and then had the audience move on to Instagram. And then once I started building up Instagram, on to Twitter. So I'm going to move on to other platforms in the future, such as like TikTok, but I'm going to continue to grow those audiences on the main platforms first.
That makes sense. And Daps, you've found yourself kind of a niche, as you were talking about, in TikTok. Is that why you decided to concentrate there? You felt like that was the best place for you to find that audience?
I think Laura had spoke about it earlier. It's just kind of where we started and where we had success, you know, in the beginning. And then obviously that was where our main focus was. And now I'm starting to realize, though, how important it is to be on all platforms. And, it, you know, to speak to John's point, too, it's every platform is different. And there's subtleties to each one. And Moneyball was just talking about how, you know, he wants to go into these advanced statistics, and YouTube is probably the best format for that, right? Whereas Instagram, it's hard to show all that data in an Instagram post. So you kind of have to get creative with all these different platforms. And what I'm realizing is that it's very difficult to be an expert in every single platform. And I'm starting to hire out for different platforms, right? Like, if you need to hire a guy who's a specialist in YouTube because your YouTube following isn't big, and I don't have enough time to do all this. I don't have enough time to figure out YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. There's so many, and the list goes on. Who knows what, if there's going to be a new app that comes out next year that's the new buzz. You know, you want to be on that app as soon as it comes out, because you got to ride that wave. And I think with TikTok, we were fortunate that we were just a little bit ahead of the curve on TikTok, right? Like, we were just on that platform as it was rising, and we took advantage of that. So,
yeah, fascinating. You know, one of the things that I've discovered here at Sports Card Investor as well is the audiences are actually considerably different across the platforms. They're much more different than I thought they would be. And I've observed this because, you know, originally we were putting almost all of our concentration just on YouTube. But, you know, recently we've really tried to put a lot of concentration as well on Instagram. And I just recently got on TikTok. I'm trying to do a little bit there as well. And what I've noticed is that when we do something on YouTube, and then sometimes we'll later repurpose clips of it for Instagram, a lot of our Instagram audience is actually seeing that brand new for the first time. You can tell in the comments, you can tell in the engagement. It's not the same people who are necessarily following us on Instagram as are following us on YouTube. There's some crossover, but it's less crossover than I would have thought. There's also less crossover between TikTok and Instagram than I would have thought as well. And I think it's because, you know, people who use these social media apps, they tend to have their preferences, and they don't have enough time to, you know, be spending the same amount of significant time every day in their YouTube app, as their Instagram app, as their TikTok app, as their Facebook app. So they veer in one direction or another. And so there really is opportunity to capture unique audiences across each platform. But as you all have said, it also takes a lot of work and commitment. So it's hard to do, and oftentimes easier to start with one particular platform. Okay, I want to talk about the sports card hobby a little bit. 2021, crazy year. Year started absolutely red hot, record sales. Things then slid down a lot over the course of the several months after that. They've kind of stabilized more recently, some cards going up some. Other cards, like base cards, we're continuing to see kind of, you know, drop some. Love to hear some impressions of 2021 and also maybe some predictions for 2022. I'm just going to open this up for whoever would like to jump in.
Yeah, I'll talk about it. 2021 and 2020 was crazy. You know, everything was going up. You know, you could just go pick a card out of the card shop and you were going to make money off of it. And in 2019, you know, I don't want to sound cocky, but I was actually kind of preparing for it. It just made sense that the way the grading prices were, and they were low, that you could buy a $1 Trae Young optic, get it graded for $10, and sell it for $100. And if you buy 100 Trae Young optics, you know, you're gonna make a lot of money. So I was buying $1 Trae Youngs, $5 Trae Young prisms, and Luka prism base were at $10, and Zion at $40. It was just common sense. So when that all blew up, prices skyrocketed, and we saw what we saw. But now we're here. PSA prices are up, and I feel like everything moves in a cycle, and we're going to see eventually, you know, PSA prices drop, and card price, the hobby, yeah, sealed wax drop, and eventually it'll make common sense again to get cheap cards graded, and you can make money off of them. And hopefully we see another, you know, rise. So I think in 2022, we're going to see things kind of level off. But hopefully we see grading prices lower and we get to that point where we're going to see that rise.
Good thoughts there. Who else wants to jump in?
I'll talk a little bit about what I think about the future. I have a huge comment on 2022. I think you're really going to have to pay attention to those numbered parallel cards. I think with everything that's coming out, PSA is finally getting all caught up with their orders. You're going to have more and more of these base cards. The prices are going to drop. And I think those numbered cards are going to become more and more valuable as the hobby continues to grow and new and more people get into the hobby. I think the pandemic really showed us how there's going to be a lot of individuals that, hey, you know, I could see this as a potential income for myself. So they're going to go all out. You're going to get more and more breakers. Plus, you don't know what the Fanatics deal. The Fanatics deal is really going to make it based on, I don't know if anybody listened to the podcast earlier. I forget which one it was, but there was an actual interview with the CEO or future vision officer, I think he called himself, over at Fanatics. I think you're going to have him on the virtual card show here very soon. So it's listening to him and seeing their direction with breakers and so forth, I really think it's going to grow, but I really think you're going to have to get really neat. It follow down like a certain path with some of the cards you want to, you know, get and potentially flip and grade and so forth. And I think those numbered parallels from popular sets are going to be huge.
Yeah, supply and demand. And we've seen, you know, we've seen the supply rise and a lot more base cards get graded for sure. So there is a lot of those hitting the market every day, it seems. And that has contributed to prices softening in that area. Laura, what's happening in the trading card games market? I know Pokemon has followed a little bit of a different pattern. What do you expect out of Pokemon? Is there continued growth there? Or what are you seeing there?
To be 100% honest with you, it's so hard to say exactly, and I don't really have an answer at this point. I'm shocked every day of what's going on in the hobby. Like, who knew that Magic the Gathering was going to drop a numbered card out of nowhere with no promotion and no notice? And, like, the one-of-one celebrity cards that are coming out, the Post Malone and Katy Perry and J Balvin, like I said, I'm shocked every day, and I'm just kind of excited for the future, but I don't know. I think things are going to get pretty interesting. And these companies are coming out with unique ways to, you know, provide these special cards. And I just hope to see more of it, honestly.
And I'm curious, we'll do a show of hands here on the panel. And this is going to be a little biased because we've got more sports card nuts than we do trading card game nuts. But if you could only invest in let's say you could buy either a really high-end Pokemon card, like, you know, first edition Charizard type level card, or you could buy only one really high-end sports card, let's say like Michael Jordan, you know, Fleer rookie, which at one point, by the way, those two cards were selling for right around the same amount of money. Which card do you think is going to be more valuable 10 years from now, give me a show of hands if you think the Charizard is going to be the more valuable of the two cards 10 years from now. Interesting. So we got a little more of the panel going in the Charizard direction. That's really interesting. Jay, let's go to you. Why Charizard? Why Pokemon? Why would that be your longer term bet?
I mean, I think for me, the reason I said Charizard is, I mean, if you're comparing it to the Michael Jordan Fleer, I just think the Michael Jordan Fleer is overrated. I think it was a common card. And I think that Charizard, are you talking about the first edition one, correct? Or,
yep.
Yeah. I mean, I think that card's pretty unique. And I think there's less of that than there is that Jordan in a good curated condition. And I'm biased as heck. The only reason I tap into Pokemon, I don't know enough about it. I know Don Diego knows a ton about trading cards, but for me, the Pokemon, I like the original holos. That's my knowledge, you know, versus sports cards. You can give me anything, but I would take the Charizard. I just think it's more rare.
Fair point. And Ryan, give me your argument for sports cards.
Yeah. So if I was going to go with the Jordan card, I'd go with his star over the Fleer just because of the pop report and being the true rookie card. But with sports cards, a lot of the idols stay around for a long time. There's a lot of TV shows, there's a lot of games and movies that are fad for years, 20 years, and then they fade out.
Fair point. Fair point. Although Pokemon is the biggest, most valuable IP collection in the world, the characters are massive, but you never know. You never know how things are going to change in the future. Daps, you're sticking with sports cards. Is that your angle too?
Well, I mean, my mind went straight to what is the pop count of PSA 10 Charizard, and I don't know that number. I don't know. Does anybody know that number in here?
Not off the top of the head, but it's only.
When all this stuff happens, you have to think about, this is what I think about with Jordan, is who is more, you look at the sales of Mantle and the sales of Babe Ruth and the sale, and listen, if we're talking about 10 years, this is different than 50 years from now, but I look at this as a long-term investment. There's nobody who's been more culturally influential than Michael Jordan ever in the history of all sports. So again, I think there's somewhere around 300 to 400 PSA 10 Jordans, and when I say culturally influential, I'm like who has a brand like Jordan? Who is still selling sneakers at $1 billion revenue 25 or how whatever year he retired 20 years after? So he is just as relevant now. You know, when you compare, you know, you don't say this is the Charizard of hockey. This is the Charizard of football. You say the Michael Jordan of football, right? Now Tom Brady obviously is going to go ballistic too over the next 20 years, but. And listen, I'm not hating on Charizard. I love Pokemon. Don't take this the wrong way, Don Diego. I'm a big sports guy. I'm probably biased, but I can't see Jordan not retaining an insane amount of value over the next 20 to 40 years. Again, I think there's like 300 PSA 10s of him. I could be wrong. Maybe I think it's under 400.
Yeah, it's 319. I think was the last count I saw.
Yeah, and then the next thing is, how many collectors hold 10 or 20 or 30 or I know, you know, I don't know if you know this guy Kuntz at OTS Sports, but I've seen him post some Giannis where he's got like 100 PSA 10 Giannis. How many Jordans does he have? 20, 30, 40, 50? I don't know. But if he has 20% of the Jordans, that means there's not really 300 out there. There's only 250 or there's only 200 that other people could acquire. So again, that's my argument there. But again, if Charizard passes him, you know, I'll say I was wrong in 10 years.
But that's where the argument comes into play, though. I mean, you got less pop report on the Charizard. I think there's only 100 around there. And then Pokemon, you talk about a brand. Pokemon has the largest brand, period. Period.
Fair so, points. I mean,
they if we're talking the same, Charizard and Pokemon – Jordan's here and boom, Pokemon's way up here in the sense of overall value, brand, and so forth. But
let's do this. 10 years from now, 10 years as of this date, we're going to do another virtual holiday, I'm sure. We're going to have all of you back on as guests. We're going to get the same panel back together. And hey, we're going to look back at this clip and we're going to see who's right. You guys in for that?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Guys, this was so much fun. We got to wrap this because we got to get on to doing some more crazy giveaways tonight. But I really, really appreciate it. You know, Laura, John, Jay, Ryan, Jordan, Matt, Daps, you guys are all awesome. Thank you so much for joining the virtual sports card show. And I will continue to watch all of your content, as I'm sure a lot of our audience will as well. Take care, everybody. All right, thanks for watching, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that conversation, and thanks to the many content creators who came on the program who were part of that. I really, really appreciate it. Hit that subscribe button and that bell icon if you haven't already so we can continue to bring you more great content like this. And until next time, thank you and enjoy your day. Take care.